Hello and welcome to this episode of the Chamber Orchestra of Europe podcast. I'm Simon Mundy. One of my roles for the orchestra is to research its story. In the course of doing this, I've spoken not only to the members of the COE, but to many of the soloists who have performed with them. I feel you might want to hear the results. Here's my conversation with the violinist Isabel Faust, recorded one afternoon in Kronberg. Of course she discussed her own playing, but also her joy of working with the COE and Bernard Haitink. To begin, here they are together in 2014 in the Searing Concerto by Alban Berg at the Barbican Centre in London. Let me start by talking about the range of stuff you play, Isabel, because you play this extraordinary range from right from 20th century back through the periods to period instrument playing. And I wondered how you came to feel that that whole range, so unusual for violinists, is something that you wanted to do.
Well, I just discovered that the violin has such an incredible and vast wide-reaching repertoire, so I just I think I got a little bit bulimic and I just wanted to cover it all basically, and on top of it trying to do it more or less in the style that was the original idea of the different periods.
Do you have different violins for your different periods?
I do play a beautiful copy of my Stradivarius. It's not my Stradivarius, but the one I use normally, by a modern violin maker who decided to copy this Stradivarius and do it in the way it was actually really born. So at the moment, it is in the Baroque, completely Baroque state, and that's the Baroque violin I use mostly for Baroque repertoire. Especially when I have to, or when I'm allowed to play with other instruments, and when I play solo violin, I give myself a little bit more freedom. Have to admit.
Which is your Strad?
It's a beautiful Strad of 1704, and it has a very, very romantic and nice name. It's called the Sleeping Beauty Stradivarius because it's been forgotten for over 150 years, so it slept its sleeping beauty sleep.
Yes. Talking about the Chamber Orchestra of Europe, how did you first come across it and when did you first play with them?
The COE memory is of course absolutely connected to dear Bernard Haitink, and I think all my concerts with this orchestra were under his baton, and that was always an extremely impressive and touching and unique experience for me to work with him, and also in combination with this group, because he was so extremely fond of this orchestra, and in the last years he was, I think that was his absolute ideal. He was always telling me how surprised he was himself actually to finally do Brahms symphonies and big romantic stuff with a smaller group like the COE, and of course with such fantastic musicians who are all kind of with a, playing in an orchestra with a very chamber intention. And that was for him, I think, a new experience in the last years, and he was completely thrilled. So it was always an honor to be part of this combination.
And for you, what was the special quality that he brought to the music with you as a soloist?
I was really deeply in awe, actually, watching and experiencing his way of taking a group from where he finds the group and carrying the group without actually barely doing anything to yet a completely different level. And he was somebody, in my opinion, who did never have the ambition to completely stamp a group and to change completely a way of playing, but to really take the qualities that he found and then sublime it. And that was a very almost discreet way of doing miracles that you couldn't really explain how he would. He would also very, at least when I was there, he would very little talk to the orchestra and give really orders. And whenever I said, well, maybe in this place, this or that instrument could be a bit more like that, he would always, always respond, I didn't do it well. It's my task to show it. So he took everything to his own responsibility, and he knew that this, his way and his responsibility and his job was to really guide the orchestra and be so clear that without really forcing anything on a group, it would go in that direction he was aiming for.
What I was loved about his conducting was his real attention to detail. He knew exactly how to bring out every timbre without affecting the shape of the sound.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely true. And with a soloist next to him, he was always completely devoted to be the best listening conductor and to really accompany and carry you on a feather cushion, as comfortable and as adapted as possible. It was a very humble way to be next to a soloist.
Did you feel that yourself when you were playing with him that you've played better?
I definitely think that he always gave me the space to not worry and to not fight and to really without being too demonstrative to just follow my musical intentions, and I would always know he understands what I'm doing. And of course, this kind of subtle freedom makes all the difference on stage.
Tell me about the time that you played the Schumann Concerto in Lucerne with Bernhard Haitink, because that I know was special.
Yes, it was so special because he was already over 80. And he decided to conduct the Schumann Violin Concerto for the first time. It was really his decision. I didn't ask him to do it. I didn't force this piece on him. But he was in a whole Schumann symphony delirium. And at that time, he did with the orchestra all the symphonies. And he was just, I mean, as all Schumann lovers, they end up in this complete a Schumann state that you can't really get out of it anymore. So he also wanted to do the concerti, and he did the cello concerto with Gautier Capuçon, and he also wanted to do the violin concerto. And he said, can you please do it with me? I said, yes, of course, it will be my honor. And then I remember he asked me in Lucerne, when he still lived next to Lucerne, to come to his home, and we spent the whole afternoon going through the piece. He took it extremely seriously. He really was looking at every single note. As you say, he loved the details really a lot. And he made me explain all my agogical ways. And so he really needed and wanted to be thoroughly prepared. And then, and then the concert came, and he was actually very nervous about it, I remember, and extremely happy that it went well and that he finally got to know this piece, which is a very special piece, especially in the whole violin repertoire. You either completely get crazy with it or you hate it forever. I have the impression. So he was definitely in the Schumann field, which I belong to. So yeah, no, that was, yeah, it was very touching to see him in his late years wanting absolutely to enter this world of violin concerto of Schumann.
That was Isabel Faust playing part of the first movement of Robert Schumann's Violin Concerto, with Bernard Haitink conducting at the Lucerne Summer Festival, also in 2014. Moving on to another soloist who has partnered the orchestra many times, here's the wonderful pianist Maria João Pires. She explains why she feels so in tune with its approach to music. Like Isabel, she also loved working with Bernard Haitink, who was still with us when we spoke.
It's not an orchestra. It's a group of real musicians that are enthusiastic and have love to music all together. It makes a big difference from a regular orchestra where you have your job, and it's the spirit of the orchestra that is more committed.
Yes. And that's very much the way that you approach music making anyway, isn't it? I mean, you've always worked in a very collegiate way like that.
Yes. And the interest this orchestra has to develop something, to create in the moment, instead of just learning things and then putting them together and going on stage. It's the moment of art. It's something that is very important if you put musicians together to play, because then we can do something unique. We can do something that touches, that transmits, that is alive. It's putting life in the group, putting life in the music, putting life in the work they are doing.
And when you've played with them, you've often played Mozart with them, but are there other parts of the repertoire that you've explored too and you enjoy playing?
Yeah. We played Schumann, we played Chopin, we played Beethoven, we played Mozart, we played many different things.
And in terms of the repertoire you do with the chamber orchestra, are there areas of it that you really enjoy exploring with them?
I must say I enjoyed every moment I worked with them. Every moment. It was always something new, something appearing, something creative, something alive, as I said. So basically, I remember, of course, the wonderful moments with Claudio Abbado that everybody has in mind.
And also, I mean, Coralia mentioned it earlier, you played at the Proms with Bernard Haitink a few years ago. And I wonder what you remember about that.
Oh, I remember a wonderful moment. I'm always stressed on the Proms, but I have a stupid fear of playing live. All live recordings, I'm completely... but you know, everybody could survive that magic moment. It's wonderful.
I often think of you and Bernard Haitink as very similar sorts of musicians.
Yes, I think we have many things in common. I think he finds me a bit crazy. I think he likes me and I like him very much. I have a real not only admiration, but the real feeling for him as a musician, as a person, as a, this honest way of making things is so beautiful.
Now, a lot of your work these days is about encouraging young musicians, isn't it, and working with younger players.
Yes.
And I wondered if you felt when you were working with the Chamber Orchestra of Europe there was some sort of similarity between what you're trying to do now and what that orchestra was doing 40 years ago as it launched into its young musicians, launched with its young musicians.
You know, I believe that real musicians are all looking for the same thing. I don't believe that I am doing a special project or I'm working. Each one of us has something slightly different to say and to transmit because we are in ourselves, we have something different or unique. But the real thing is the same. We want to discover things with a certain truth. With a certain where things are, they are alive, they exist, but they change all the time. So this is art, and this is also for me is our connection to things we don't know, to the universe. And art is a connection to the universe, so to everything that is unknown for us, but in fact we can be connected with that, you know, in a certain way. And I think if you keep being yourself and collaborating with people that think the same way and that look for the same thing, then it's not so much a special project. Is more the real thing. That's how I feel. Every moment with that orchestra had something special, deep and truth. And I think, of course, the moments with Claudio Abbado were especially because they were magic. They were pure communication, pure connection with something that we all want to feel.
Maria João Pires playing the Larghetto, the second movement of Mozart's 27th Piano Concerto, K595, in Dijon in 2010. The conductor was Trevor Pinnock, himself a fine keyboard player, usually thought of as a period instrument specialist. Back to the strings now. Here's one of the world's finest viola soloists and chamber players, Antoine Tamsty. He told me he first came to know the COE, not as a performer, but as a listener, discovering its work with Guidon Kremer and Nicolas Haunencourt. Antoine, when would you first come across the Chamber Orchestra of Europe?
I actually know very well because it's two recordings, both Beethoven, Beethoven symphonies with Haunencourt, Beethoven violin concerto with Haunencourt and Guidon Kremer, And somehow this was the first recordings that I bought for myself. I mean, I had recordings that I got as a gift, but I think when I was about 21 or 22, I started buying, you know, and it represents what I wanted to hear, or a direction I was trying to find, or an identity I was trying to find. And I was drawn by the energy of mostly of Harnoncourt, but I had actually met Gidon Kremer here in 2002. I played with him in Kronberg at the chamber music festival called Chamber Music Connects the World. And Gidon's approach, both searching for authenticity in style, authenticity in expression, in feelings, in who you are, what you are saying is, and how you care about notes, really was a very strong inspiration for me. So I became a bit obsessed with Gidon's recordings, Gidon's work, and I had already been by my parents, by my aunt, who's a violinist as well, been introduced to Harnoncourt. And so it all came really together. And the funny thing is that a few years later, I don't know if this is even relevant here, but I became very good friends, not anymore, unfortunately, but with one of the artistic bosses from Teldec. And he told me a lot about that recording session and that how apparently, and I don't know if you were there at the recording session, but there was an electricity about, you know, doing this together. And also, as we saw also later on, the ability of Harnoncourt to find the right soloist for certain projects, which is not necessarily the soloist you expect, and how he worked with Bartoli, with Kremer, with Pierre Laurent, or this kind of choices, even with, until the end, with Lang Lang, the project with Lang Lang and Vienna Philharmonic. It's always interesting how, why he chooses a soloist. And now the color world of Gidon, associated with the energy and the always putting things in question of Harnoncourt, became very important for me, and maybe one of the biggest influences. And it turned out that my recording engineer of the last years was the one who did a lot of the Harnoncourt recording of the last 10 years.
And as a player, what was your first experience of COE?
That was 10 years ago. We would have to check. In the Kölner Philharmonie, this I remember, with Lorenza leading the COE and a classical program, kind of a Christmas well-being program with wonderful classical composers. And they accepted, I say accepted because we really talked about it, to do the Hofmeister Viola Concerto. And then in the second half, we played the Sinfonia Concertante with Lorenza. And so it was wonderful. But I remember a joke that they say that at the beginning, they all turned to me and they said, can we ask you a question before starting? Why do you want to play Hofmeister? Because there is this, unfortunately, this tradition of hearing the Hofmeister as an orchestral audition, mandatory piece. And with orchestral audition, I think people, juries, musicians are looking for something else than what do we do with this piece. They're looking for how are you solid as a player, what is your sound, what is your intonation, your rhythm. And the Hofmeister is only a great piece if we look at it from the spirit and from the energy and from the... And so I tried to say that to them, but I realized, you know, I have to prove it to them. And luckily, it went so well, and also because we could do the Mozart at the same time, and I could express with Lorenza what I feel in the classical style with Mozart, and then seeing similarities and trying to find how the slow movement of the Hofmeister is as beautiful as some of the moments that Mozart can create. And of course, Mozart goes much further, but the tenderness, the pain, the nostalgia is really wonderful with Hofmeister. And the outer movements, you have to find a spirit. And it maybe it's more obvious with Mozart, but we did it, and the work already I could feel without conductor, this kind of chamber music thing where we talk about bowings, we talk about phrasing, what we say with the bow, how it's a language. I was so inspired to play.
The partnership between Guidon Kremer and Niklaus Harnoncourt that so inspired the young Antoine Tamesti. There they were playing the opening of Beethoven's Violin Concerto, recorded for the Teldec label, now part of Warner Classics, in 1993. As part of our conversation in the autumn of 2022, Antoine and I started to talk about the concert that had opened Kronberg's new Casals Forum Hall the previous evening. The COE had established a residency there, and that evening Antoine directed the COE and some of the Kronberg Academy's participants in Benjamin Britten's Lacrimae, variations based on John Dowland's music, and followed it with two of his own arrangements of Dowland songs. Here in Kronberg, you started with Dowland, I Flow My Tears, wonderful, wonderful music. And you arranged that, and it's a very fascinating arrangement because you come with a,
an almost chorale-like feeling at the beginning.
Yeah.
And I wondered what drew you to make those arrangements.
Simply, and I wish I could have said this yesterday to the audience, simply I came to it because of Britten himself. At the end of the Lacrimae, Britten does only that. And he doesn't add any notes. The last three lines, it's just Dowland's music, chords, simple, and nothing added. I even think you heard yesterday that in Dowland one could add ornaments and little beauty things between the notes. And Britten does not do that, but he does an orchestration in a way, dividing it in the strings. So I took that as a basis. He doesn't quote the whole song, If My Complaints, at the end, so I just did it for the whole song, but exactly like Britten does. So I didn't invent anything. And then I was left with Flow My Tears, which Britten only quotes for a short time and only the second phrase and with a very different accompaniment. And I love this song. I find it also the choice of rhythm to go with the words, even, you know, to have a long note with flow, with FL, O-W-L, a long, long vowel, and then that my tears, because it's a tear that drops, that are two notes. And oh, I wanted to play this. I really wanted to know that the audience knows how beautiful this music is, and difficult to find a replacement for the lute.
Well, did you manage it? Because what you did with that is manage to make the orchestra feel like a lute, but at the same time have the breadth to be a stringed orchestra.
But it's nice. It honestly, I've done it a few times already, but never like yesterday. And because they were sensitive both to the music itself and the fact that we had to find something else. It's very special color, special balance. I'm playing with mute both songs. They are playing with mute the second song. They are playing only pizzicato. They suggested to play like a guitar, like a lute. And we worked on sound because Britten does that with his variations. He works on how do you even hear one note or how you go from one note to the next, and suddenly it becomes very contemporary. But we could do that work in the Dowland, and it was honestly a luxury. Not just to say for your book, but just for me, it was a luxury to work on refined details like this. Thank you.
During my conversation with Antoine Tamesti, you heard extracts from his performance for the COE of Benjamin Britten's Lacrimae, Opus 48, for alto, in other words viola, and strings, and Antoine's own arrangement of John Dowland's song Flow My Tears, Fall From Your Springs, Exiled For Ever, Let Me Mourn. Our thanks to Hesse Radio for making that recording from September 2022 available. The COE has performed with so many great musicians over the years. In future podcasts, I hope we'll be able to hear from more of them. I'm Simon Mundy. Thank you for listening.